Have you ever wondered how to make sense out of your messy life or how to live in peace in the middle of a stressful world? My name is Jamie Norton, and I want to welcome you to the Making Peace and Beyond podcast. In almost 50 years as a counselor, I have seen a lot of life happen, and this podcast is going to cover all of it. So thanks for joining us while we explore life's struggles and how to live in the peace, joy, and freedom that Christ died to give us. My guest today is Jenny Persons, who is a very close friend of mine and has been for a long time. Jenny and I both went through a divorce when we had very young children, and we wanted to spend some time today just talking about what it was like to go through the divorce, what it was like to be a single parent a couple of three decades ago.
Yes.
And really look at what's important in terms of maybe being a single parent now. We have over half of our marriages in this country are not making it, and so there's a lot of children who have only one parent in the family, and there's not a whole lot of instruction and compassion about how to make that work. So, Jenny, welcome to Making Peace and Beyond.
Thank you, Jamie. I'm really glad to be here. You've been instrumental in walking alongside of me during those years as a single parent and up until now, and I'm grateful to be here to share my story with you.
You did so much better job of being a single parent than I did, and we're going to talk about the differences in that, because it was really in 1969 that I became a single parent. My child, my children's father left with my best friend in 1968, and as our son was being born, and I had a four-year-old and a baby and had no place to go. I wasn't equipped to be a single parent. I was in the generation that women were supposed to grow up and get married and have children and stay at home. And so I had no idea what to do. And I remember just bouncing around with a suitcase from my parents to his parents to my sisters to and to not knowing what to do and just being totally overwhelmed, just very depressed. I drank a lot. And I don't know how my children survived me, really. I mean, it's all along. God is amazing in terms of how he takes care of children. But finally landed in an apartment in Raleigh, and it was a long story from there. So how old were your children when you...
So I was divorced in 1994, but the whole scenario started in 1992 when I was 7 months pregnant and had a two-year-old at home. And when we were divorced, he was 18 months and two and a half. No, three. So they were very young. It was a very scary time. My husband had been financially abusive and led another life. I had been caught up in my corporate job, and I was very alone and afraid. I didn't have the challenges you had in terms of bouncing from place to place to live. I had a home, but it was uprooted, and I really was empty and did not know how to push forward. And my journey began then to find a way for my kids and I to be accepted, to find healing, and to start a new life. But I didn't know the way there.
There was no instruction, and I think still it's almost worse than death, because when somebody dies, it's permanent. You don't have that sense of failure. You have rituals around death. Everybody has a lot of compassion for the widow or widower when someone dies. But there's nothing for single people. Sometimes there's a lot of judgment. What did you do wrong? And I think even internally, it's what did I do wrong? Why wasn't I good enough? Why did this happen to me? What do I do? And I think that's changed to some extent, but not much.
You know, I would agree with you, Jamie. I ran into that same thing. Even in my story talks about finding a church that was willing to embrace me as a divorced woman with young kids, which in 1992 was difficult. And it's the church I still attend today, Grace. But there were pockets of judgment in that church. I mean, I remember times even in classes I was in that they would say, you know, children of single parents are always trouble. people who are divorced, there's something wrong, and it's challenging. And I think that judgment is still there today.
I think there's this kind of Pollyanna kind of myth that there's always a way to work it out. And in fact, God can heal if both people show up for the healing in a real way. But I've seen churches tell women who are being abused or whose children are being abused, go back and love your husband. Wear a negligee when he comes home. I mean, yes. There's so many just simple kind of thoughts and comments about what's working. And sometimes it's just not possible. And sometimes, like in my situation, he left and did not pay child support. He paid for a little while and then stopped. In those days, it was really even more difficult because I couldn't even get a credit card. Women had to have a male cosigner to get a credit card.
Wow.
And that was bizarre. I was working for a bank before I went to graduate school, and I couldn't get a credit card through the bank. I said, I do thousands of dollars worth of your money every day. But it was It was just a very difficult time, and I ended up somehow going to graduate school as a single parent. And I think as I work with people today, I think I don't know how that happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was God, because, you know, I had no child support. I had a part-time job and went to graduate school. And I think I probably totally neglected my children at some level, but I remember just trying to do all of it. Mm-hmm. And how hard that is. And I, unlike you, did not seek out a church. I did try to go back to church because I grew up in the church, and I kept trying to go back to church. But mine was in the late 60s, and There was not a whole lot of divorce going on. And so there was nothing there for single parents. And besides that, I moved a lot. And one of the things it took me a long time to really see is how detrimental it was for my children, that not only did they had no stability, because I moved every time they would get settled. I drank. I paraded men in and out. Mm-hmm. I think I was looking for the guy. But it was really obvious. You were mentioning about how people are prejudiced about single families, so single parents, and really non-compassionate of how very hard it is. When you're a single parent of a young child, you can't run out and get milk at night without waking your child up. Right. You know, it's what was it like for you?
You know, my story's a little bit different. I had a corporate job, so I was secure in being able to provide for my kids. But as I said before, it was a really lonely path, and I did not know where to go. I will say that I initially did some of the things you did in terms of finding a couple of relationships with men to see if that would numb the pain of the divorce, and maybe I could bring somebody else in to help me raise my kids. But that didn't work, and that's where the journey into the church really helped me, because I found people who would come around me even though I was in the midst of this mess, and they came around my kids, and they loved on us. And while there were pockets of judgment, they weren't everywhere. And I think that's true in life. We need to find our people, our community. And I found my people in the church. And it is amazing to me how I got through that pain. And then on the other side, I was able even to minister to single parents.
Yeah, when I met you, you had a thriving single parent ministry going on. And it was amazing. And I was just amazed that we had divorce care, we had single parent ministry, and we embraced and came around single parents for the most part. You know, there's always going to be a judgment. There's always going to be, we were talking earlier, and I said, you know, when my children went out to play with other children and they all got dirty, their children were out playing. Mm-hmm. My children were uncared for. people would use the term broken family. And I remember when I became a counselor and I would go to professional training, I would stand up in meetings, and when somebody used the term broken family, and I would say, wait just a minute, I'm a single-parent family. I know families that have two parents at home that are much more broken than mine.
And, well, that, you know, that is so true. And one of the things that we would help shepherd other single parents in is to believe that they are a family. They are not broken. They can thrive. They can survive. They can heal. And the other piece I want to just point out is I think in single parent ministry, we came alongside the kids. So I think often what happens is you come alongside the parent, which is important, and there's pain there from the divorce. But, you know, the kids, they're the innocent victims. And kids who've gone through that and walk that road can so easily believe, I'm the problem. I'm the reason this happened. Mommy and Daddy don't love me. I got in the way. And so it's really important as you come alongside a single parent to also embrace their kids and show their kids love and speak truth to the kids, because there's those underlying messages that they can carry with them that aren't theirs to carry.
I think one of the things that you mentioned is very important. I think there's two basic things that children need to be told if their parents are going to separate. One of those is that they are not responsible.
Yes.
They're not responsible for the separation. And the other is that you're not leaving them, that you are still going to be their parent. And all too often, parents do leave their children. I mean, it's, you know, there was a time when only about a quarter of fathers were paying child support because it wasn't enforced. And I was one of those parents that did not receive it. But I remember when my son was in first or second grade, he made up a father. I mean, and he took everything that he had ever heard about his father and made up a father. And the teacher called me and said that this was going on. But it was, he was an incredible man. I mean, it was a Superman dad, you know, that he made up. It was, but I remember on holidays and birthdays, both of my children waiting for the phone to ring.
Yeah, yeah.
Waiting to hear from their dad. And I think one of the things that a church can do, like you're saying, is to come around the kids. You know, if a little boy doesn't have a role model man,
yep,
then he doesn't know how to become a man. A woman can't raise a man easily. You know, it's, you know, to have strong community around them that lets them know that they're special and they're precious and that they're not different.
Right. And I would wholeheartedly agree with that. My situation was different. My husband or ex-husband now was still involved in their lives, but his values were so very, very different from what I believed. And so I also worked to get my kids exposed to men who carried the same values that I did. But, you know, the other thing I'm going to say is I was at one point given the opportunity to move my kids away to another state. And I chose to stay in Cleveland so that they could still see their dad and have a relationship with their dad. So I also think it is important not, if the other partner is around, not to deny your kids the opportunity for that relationship. I think for me, the anguish came when my son, he was four, and his dad would pick him up and then drop him off. And he was so distraught when his dad dropped him off that he would try to run out the door after the car. And I would have to restrain him. And as much as I didn't like the man who had done all of these things in our marriage, I realized that for my kids, even if he wasn't ideal, that that relationship was important. And so I didn't fight it.
I think one of the saddest things I see in people who are separating is that children become the weapon that they use against each other.
Yes.
And the anger is funneled through the child, and the child is deprived of having the right to love both parents. And all children love both parents. I mean, regardless of how bad it was, they want that relationship with the other parent. And if they're made to feel shame or guilt because they desire to see the other parent or because they're happy about the other parent, and it's really, really sad for them to have to make choice. And the fear of making a parent mad because you love the other parent is so sad.
It's very sad, and kids take it on so easily. One of the things that I said I would not do, and I was certainly not perfect in this because I'm a human being like everybody else, is that I would not talk disparagingly about my ex-husband in front of my kids, and that I would be patient and allow them on their own with, you know, guiding from me to learn who is their father.
I remember when I was in graduate school, I was struggling with that whole thing about what do I do, you know, with that. And I asked several people who had grown up in single-parent families, how did your parents handle the relationship with each other, and how did that affect you? And almost unanimously, they said when the parent, one parent sort of talked down about the other parent, that it they resented it. Mm-hmm. But if they were left to have that relationship, yep, ultimately they would come up with the truth about who that parent was, you know, and very often it would validate, you know, something. But it's really interesting how children do, they have their own mind, and they have their own relationship, and they can have a really good relationship with a parent that the other parent doesn't. And I think it's you did a great thing there. You know, your children's father was a lot more involved than my children's father was. They saw him periodically, and they wanted to see him.
Yeah.
And it was really hard. You mentioned how the value structure of the other parent can be very different, mm-hmm, and how hard it is for a child to grow up in homes that have very different set of rules and standards, or no rules at all, or and it is confusing.
Can be very confusing. I've often thought of my sons being pulled in two different directions. Mm-hmm. At one point, actually, when I was working with you, we started to have family meetings. So it would be my kids and my ex-husband and his new wife. And we would agree upon things. And value-wise, I would say, we've agreed upon these things, so that's what's going to happen. Well, he turned around and just did what he wanted to do with them and gave them what they wanted, despite what he had said in this meeting. And that was hard.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that I couldn't compromise, and I knew ultimately he's actually revealing who he is by doing that to my kids. So I encourage single parents who've got the other spouse involved or your former spouse involved to try to work with them.
Absolutely.
But it's not always possible. And in your situation, where they're just gone, which is
very different.
Very, very different.
It's you know, children also, the tendency we have is to feel sorry for the children. I remember the first Christmas that I was a single parent, my children got four sets of Santa Claus.
Yep.
I mean, my parents, his parents, he was still involved then to some extent, and me. And you know, it was, everybody felt sorry for them, you know. And I remember my daughter was four, and one day she wanted to do something, and I said no. And she looked at me with the most tearful eyes and said, "But Mom, after all, you should let me do that. After all, I don't have a daddy."
Oh, my goodness.
It didn't work. But it was... I mean, it doesn't take children long to know if people feel sorry for them. And pity is the worst possible thing, because pity is always condescending. It says you're not as good. and you're not okay. And so pity is a really not good thing to have. It's like, yeah, we have a different family structure, but you're still expected to do the things that you're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. I have a couple of dear friends who have been single parents along with me who I met on this journey. And one of them and I were talking about the fact that we actually, as single moms, felt so guilty ourselves for the circumstances and the fact that the dads who were around were either not there or not what we would want them to be, that we just gave our kids too much.
You try to overcompensate.
You overcompensate. And so today, we say to ourselves, well, why do our kids see us in the way that they do? Like, you know, mom's there for everything. She'll do anything for me. I don't even have to ask. And, you know, as I look back, it's because I overcompensated. It's one of the lessons I learned on that journey, and I tell other single moms, don't do that. They need the structure and the discipline that, as every other child needs.
I call it the mama bear syndrome.
Yeah.
It's like somebody has hurt my cub and nobody is going to ever hurt them again. Yeah. And they're not going to have any pain. I think we do that in two-parent families a lot, that our children aren't supposed to suffer. Our children aren't supposed to have pain. And yet we know that in growing, you know, pain forces us to grow. It's an opportunity to learn how to weather life. And we've made children very fragile with the, you know, we had the helicopter moms, and then we have the bulldozer moms.
Yes, we do.
Bulldoze everything. And it handicaps the children in the long run. I mean, I know, and my son would be the first to tell you that I enabled him well into his adult life, that he wasn't going to hurt, that there was nothing going to happen to him. And I think because he was, their father was actually out with my best friend when he was born.
Yeah.
So it was right on top of that. And I think I became so protective of him, you know, that that it almost destroyed him. And he'll be the first one to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, we do things that we believe are best for our kids, and sometimes we're overcompensating for things. And
we're doing it through our own sadness, our own
feeling. We are. It is through our own filter, our own sadness, our own brokenness inside. And, I mean, the thing is that on my journey as a single mom, one of the things I really needed to do was take care of myself. So I went to counseling, and I looked at what was it that I contributed to this relationship. And for me, it's what the Lord used to draw me into a relationship with Him. But there's healing there that we need to take hold of on that journey. We need to take hold of it for our kids as well. And I always have said to single parents, you need to take care of yourself. Because it's easy to give everything you have to your kids, but you've got to take care of yourself.
It's probably one of the more common things we see in single parent families, that women and men often don't take care of themselves, or they and then the children grow up, and it's hard for the children to leave. Because
yes.
Everything has been focused on the children, and now who am I, and what am I here for, and you find a lot of pathology in that launching business, the whole thing of launching children, you know, that we're really just glorified babysitters, whether we're single or married.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like in 18 years, they're supposed to get out the door. You know, and if we don't equip them to do that, if you look at parenting as the purpose of parenting is to teach your child to live in a world that does not care about them without you.
Yes.
And if they can't do that, then that has been a failed parent situation.
Right.
And it means they've got to learn how to do things, to take care of themselves, to weather the pain and suffering that comes from life, unfortunate relationships, to work hard, to contribute to the world that they're living in, and that sort of thing. They're not there for us to be little prince and princesses, you know, that we tend to make them into. But I do think it's it's really hard and tiring to be a single parent. And I know one thing for me, because I didn't do it well. My kids were 10 and 13 when I went into recovery, because I partied and I did those things. Then I felt really guilty because not only had my children's father left, I was not who I needed to be, and I jerked them all over the place. And they're in their late 50s now, so so we've survived it. And but it really is looking back, I realized that I did not have a healthy social life, you know, and how important it is for people to do more what you did, to seek a loving church community, to help them to know that when they leave, God does go with them, that they're not going out there by themselves, that God's with them and he's going to go with them, and to teach them to have that as the central support and the central source of strength in their life and not make it yourself.
Yeah, that is so important, I found on the journey. And I tend to be more of an introvert and was raised in an environment where it's not okay to ask for help. And one of the things I needed to learn as a single parent, and I think you said it earlier, you know, you're carrying the full load that two people normally carry, is to find community and to make my needs known and to allow others to walk alongside of me. So I mentioned two friends. There are two friends that I met on the journey. We've been friends for 25 years, and we helped each other walk that together with our kids. And
you're still friends.
We're still friends. Very, very good friends, actually.
Yeah. And it's to that makes it easier for everyone. It's easier for your sons to leave. It's easier for you to have a life after they leave. There is life after children, it turns out.
There is, although I will say as a single mom, I had a lot of focus on my kids. I chose not to date or pursue another relationship while I was raising them because I felt like there was enough noise and enough other things around that I wanted to focus on for them. And so when they left, I felt like my right arm was torn off.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's another story for another time. But
yeah, it is. I think it's a little bit more traumatic when you're a single. I remember when my daughter got married, it was such a good marriage. I was so happy for her because the man she married is amazing. And it was a good summer. She was home from college and home from working. That's she was a teacher, and she was really excited. And we went through all of the wedding preparations and the parties and the everything else. And I was and we had the wedding and we had this beautiful reception. And then they got in the car and rode off without me. And I remember just feeling very left behind, you know, like, oh my, you know, and she's going to go into her family now. And it was just, it was very, very physical almost.
Yeah, like a physical reaction to that, because that's a huge transition. It is for two-parent families as well, but for single parents in particular, it's even harder.
I mean, it's hard enough when they leave to go to college, but when they leave to get married, it is the done deal. You know, you are no longer the most important person in their life.
No, that's a big transition in itself. My sons are 34 and 31, and still some days it's hard to acknowledge that I'm not the most important person in their lives.
But I do think... you did such a good work with helping our church embrace single parent, and it's so important that people hear that, how important it is to embrace the single parent, how important it is to come around the children, to give them a sense of normalcy, a sense of family, especially if there's no family around, you know, I mean, no biological family around, to be able to have a place that is theirs, to have a community that they can rest in and abide in, and a God that can hold them, and a Father who loves them and will not leave them, will right. not forsake them, and to make the church the center of that life. I think your decision to not date was really a good one.
Wasn't an easy one, but I think in the long run it was a good one for my kids and for me. It gave me the time to heal. It gave me the time to grow in my faith in God and see how He could hold me up and provide along the way for the needs that we had. And one of the things that you have said about the church embracing is so critical. I think it's really easy, and I say it's easy for me in my life. I have my box, right? I live in my box. And it's hard sometimes for me to step outside and look at the box of another person.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage people who don't understand divorce or single parenthood to put yourself outside the box and think about what that must be like. And what kinds of needs might that family have for you to, or that single parent have for you to come alongside them? And, you know, that's part of the community and the church overall.
Yeah, things like that people don't think of, like holidays.
Yes.
If there's no family to go to, then sometimes that can be the most. I remember the first Christmas I decided I'm going to stay at home. We're going to have Christmas at home. And, you know, put out the gifts, did all of that, and immediately, that was the most lonely night, you know, ever. But to have a place to go on holidays, to be included in small groups, to be included in meetings, to not be a separate project, but to be a legitimate, you know, full part of a community, I think is so important when you're dealing with people who don't live like you do, because it is hard to look outside your box and to have compassion or a sensitivity to someone who may have different needs than you. So I really appreciate you. I mean, we've walked
you.
A long time together
yes,
through a lot
we have.
Of stuff. My grandchildren were the same age as your sons.
Yes.
And so it was, you know, it's been, we've gone through a lot of stuff. So I really am so glad you're here and just happy to be your friend. And thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you too, Jamie. Thank you for walking alongside me. You're part of that tribe that's been with me along the way.
Thank you so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed this conversation, please like and subscribe, leave a review, tell your friends, and join us on all of our social media channels. Thanks again, and God bless you.